As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, I'm Tom Butler.
I'm Brendan Duffy.
And I'm Tom Wheatley.
And you're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us as three lifelong 007 fans go on a journey of discovery.
We're on a mission to discover everything we can about cinema's greatest spy films.
By learning about the people who made them, in front of the camera and behind.
The James Bond A to Z podcast is in no way affiliated with James Bond, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We've researched each episode as extensively as we can, but our information does come from a range of sources. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we can get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us at podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Yes, you are listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast. Welcome again. My name is Tom Butler. I am joined by Mr. Brendan Duffy.
Hello.
And Wheatley. Tom Wheatley.
Hello.
That was a weird one.
I changed my tact halfway through that, and I wish I hadn't now, but carry on.
Hello. We've been talking quite a lot about Sean Connery the last few episodes. It was a real pleasure to do that, the first James Bond actor on film. So we just thought we would take a little detour at this point and look back over his films and do an official James Bond A to Z podcast ranking of the Sean Connery James Bond films. It occurred to me the other day that in America they might call it the James Bond A to Z podcast. How do you feel about that?
Well, I've accidentally said that by a slip of the tongue, so I'm okay with that.
I don't care. I think it's fine. As long as they're listening, they can call it whatever they want.
Great. Well, there you go. And I wonder where else they call it. What do they call it in Canada? A Z or a Z? Who knows?
Ooh,
Australia?
Z? I would go... Z?
Yeah?
Is this backed up by facts? Have you got facts and stats for us, or is it just...
I have no clue.
We'll throw it into the wind and somebody will email in and go, it's wrong.
No clue.
We don't even have the letter Z.
I tell you what, if we're getting picked up on facts... And the main thing people are emailing about is our pronunciation of a Z. I think that's pretty good considering the amount of nonsense we probably discuss.
Well, before we get to our James Bond ranking and our definitive answer on how to say the letter Z, we do have an email. Thank you for mentioning emails. This is from Jordan Waller. He says he's a real nerd and he's wondering very much about the business side of things. So how long does Eon have control over the James Bond franchise? And what's the relationship between Eon and the Fleming Estate? Do they have it forever? I'm wondering in particular about the future of the franchise now that MGM might be being taken over by Amazon. I honestly don't know what the situation is. I've always wondered this, like how do they retain the rights to James Bond? Because I guess it's just a case of if they don't make one for a certain amount of time, the rights may lapse. I think that might be how it works.
Mm.
Does anyone, either of you two know?
I have no idea. Well, I'm waiting until we get to letter E.
Yeah, that's what I told Jordan, but we would find out for the letter E and ask some
people. Sorry, Jordan, you're going to have to listen until the letter E.
At this rate, might take a while, but yeah. So, shall we look at the Sean Connery James Bond films and rank them?
Why not?
Yes.
Insert sting here. Bomb, 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 bomb. Right.
I don't need to now, do I?
So, how we did this was I asked you two to send me your rankings, and I've compiled them and given each film an average score. I was thinking in terms of the order we do this, we'll do number one first and then go from best to worst. What do you think?
Oh, I think you go the opposite way. Because I think they're going to be pretty similar. And I'm fairly certain I know what one and two would be, but I'm quite excited to find out if that's not true.
Well, that is interesting. So I can tell you that we've all put the first three exactly the same order. And we've also put the number seven, all put the same number seven film. So he made seven James Bond films, and that's including Never Say Never Again. So what do you want, in reverse order or in...
Do Top of the Pops style.
So
the Top of the Pops.
Okay. So number...
And with the singing.
No. Brendan, can you give us a Sean Connery and in at number seven?
And in at number seven. I don't know what's in at number seven.
That's a top. That's Top of the Pops and at number seven. Not a Sean Connery.
I want a Sean Connery one.
Oh, Sean Connery. What is this assumption? Why do you think I can do a Sean Connery?
Well, it's easy for a number seven, isn't it?
You're an impresario.
A seven. Number seven.
That's it.
It's not bad, actually.
So we all decided that Diamonds Are Forever is Sean Connery's worst James Bond film.
Good.
Yeah. Now, there are people out there who will defend Diamonds Are Forever to death. I will say that it's watchable. What would you say?
I think it's... Well, to be honest, I was one of those people. If you'd have asked me 2 months ago which one's the worst Connery film, I wouldn't have said Diamonds Are Forever. But when we all watched it, it's... I just don't think it's aged well. I think it's one of those ones that's very, very much, you know, rose-tinted glasses. When I look back at it, I think, oh, I used to love that film. It's not an enjoyable... In comparison to some of the other ones, it just hasn't aged well, and it's just quite boring in a lot of places. There's a lot of really long scenes that just are unnecessary, and obviously Connery didn't want to be there. And you can tell that. I think when you're younger, you can't tell. You never realise that there was this arc of his career where he really didn't want to be Bond by a certain point, and you don't think about that. But when you know that, it's just so obvious watching it.
Yeah, I think the rose-tinted spectacles is a big issue, and I also think the theme song is doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, agreed.
Of that nostalgic, Diamonds Are Forever, because the song is great.
I'd say that he seems disinterested, but I think it does add a relaxed air to him for worse. He does seem more sort of... more chill in this one than perhaps other ones, but I think that sort of almost translates into him just sort of looking like he can't be bothered.
Yeah, it's blasé Bond, isn't it?
Yeah. I think a lot of the stuff could be redeemed. Like Connery's role in it could have been redeemed. I think Tiffany Case is great. I think she does a brilliant job in it. But the set pieces are so boring. Like being in Vegas for like a massive part of the film is a really dull place for it. It's a nice idea, and if you're in there for 15 minutes, it'd be brilliant, because they're in there for so long and it just gets really boring. So it's just so many elements to it that I just think come together, and you, by the end of it, you're just tired of watching it.
Yeah.
Say something positive about it. Winton Kidd.
Well, Crispin's Glover's dad.
I think they're all right. I think they're quite funny.
The scene where Tiffany Case changes her appearance is good.
Yeah, that's good.
I think Tiffany Case is great in it. I like the scene when they're fighting in the lift with Peter Franks. I think that's a great scene.
Yes.
It's a really nice angle.
Yep, good shout.
That's in Amsterdam, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is a good location for that. Which is like one of the few interesting location changes of the film. I mean, I'm struggling to think of other bits as well. I think basically as soon as they get to Las Vegas, it goes downhill. It just becomes a bit of a slog.
Yeah, obviously Blofeld's ridiculous in this film, but I quite like the one-liner where he pops out of the manhole and he's, I've just taken my rat out for a walk and I got lost. Those are stupid, absolutely ridiculous one-liner for Bond.
Yeah. They got lazy on the one-liners in... I wonder if you could review Bond films based on the quality of the one-liners in them.
Well, I think they all have good one-liners, even like, you know, even the more sort of less humorous ones have good one-liners in them, I think. So Diamonds Are Forever at number 7. Number 6, then, what do you think is going to be at number 6?
Never Say Never.
Yeah, like easily Never Say Never Again. This is the unofficial James Bond. Well, actually, both Wheatley and I ranked it second worst, and Brendan, you ranked it the third worst.
Third worst.
Yeah. Mm. Why did you rank it the third worst? You ranked it over Thunderball.
Yeah, and this is where we're going to get emails in. Because Thunderball, I know they're basically this similar film. It's the same story, isn't it? But so much underwater stuff in Thunderball.
You hate water, don't you?
I'm not a fan of water. No, because you
hated Waterworld. I remember you saying at the time you absolutely hated it.
I just, yeah, you can't see what's going on. I'm just not a fan of it at all, really. And I think I prefer Never Say Never Again, and it just lacks that shine of a real Bond theme and you know, the official Eon stamp on it.
Well, before we talk Thunderball properly, what about Never Say Never Again? What makes this better than Diamonds Are Forever?
I think Connery cares a bit more. Yeah. I think he's a bit more interested in it. I think it benefits from the fact that it's removed from the canon.
Yeah.
So you treat it differently. And I think it's a little bit more enjoyable for that. Like, I know the fact that it doesn't have the Bond music really is stupid. Like that at the end of the film where... I can't even know what Rowan Atkinson's character is called, but he's like in a pool, and they have a chat, and then he kisses Kim Basinger, and then that music comes in. Never, 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 and you go, what is going on here? But I think it works for that. I think that it's like intriguing to watch. It's just interesting to see, and I think it benefits from that. I think it's like an interesting element to the Connery saga, and also, I've always just never classed it as a Bond film, but as we've like gone on, I do class it as a Bond film now. I think it's an interesting part of the Bond series.
You've got to include it. Have to, I think. It's so part and parcel of the whole story. I've got two words for you with Never Say Never Again. Fatima Blush. She is outstanding. Mm-hmm. Barbara Carrera in this film.
Yeah.
She's just brilliant. She really gives it 100% on every moment she's in. And for me, that elevates the film to another level. I think she's fantastic.
What about that absolutely ridiculous computer game scene? You quite liked that, didn't you? Like a director that's never seen anybody play a computer game before.
Yeah, I mean, that is silly. That is daft. And also when he pops up in the dungarees as well, that is also quite a funny moment. And then
he still looks better than he does in You Only Live Twice for me.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But
I enjoy the fact that they reference his age.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one of the things it brings a bit of added realism to what he actually looks like. They're referencing like his age.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
So yeah.
It's a really interesting point of for Bond fans, those are the kind of apex moments in Bond history that are really interesting, aren't they? Like the Thunderball stuff, the Never Say Never Again stuff. And obviously Never Say Never Again obviously was the same, the issue with Octopussy as well. So it's got that bit of history to it as well. So it's it's just really cool to watch because you know all of that stuff by now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess as a standalone sort of thing, it's if you took it out of context and was just watching it as a spy film with Sean Connery, and it might not be as memorable. Yeah.
And if you went to watch it in, was it 1983?
Yeah.
If you went to watch it then, we might walk out of the cinema and go, oh.
Well. It did pretty well, but, I think, at the now, box office.
Yeah.
So then God, Brendan gives it in at number five.
In Connery?
Well, I can't tell you. I mean, dare you to do it in Connery.
Can't do a five. And in at number five.
Thunderball. Yeah. It ranked very similar for all of us, but I ranked it... Let's have a look. Oh, you ranked it second from bottom. I ranked it third from bottom. And Wheatley, you put it as the fourth best Bond film, Sean Connery Bond film.
I would have gone higher. But I actually love Thunderball. I think it's, again, rose-tinted spectacles. I remember watching it as a kid. It was probably one of my favourites as a kid, just because there's loads of really interesting stuff to it. You know, if you think about the Bond films as like all the different things that happen. So like, you know, Thunderball has just got so many elements to it. Like You Only Live Twice, they're very similar in the fact that they're very colourful films. There's loads happening. There's sharks, there's boats, there's all sorts of things. And I just remember it being really fun to watch when I was younger. Now it's a little bit different because it is a little bit sillier than I remember, but I still think it's a great film. I still enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I would rank it higher, to be honest, but just due to the fact that there's four better James Bond films with Sean Connery in. but it is good. We saw, again, I think we saw this one at the BFI a few years ago now. It must have been nearly 10 years ago, I think. And it was enjoyable. I'd love to see it on the big screen again to see what I thought. But yeah, it does have some great sort of iconography. It's got the rocket, the jetpack, obviously.
Yeah.
It has got a DB5 scene. It's got the stuff at Shrublands. It's all interesting stuff, isn't it? And then you've got just a really Disco nice Volante.
It's just a beautiful film to watch, really. It's a very, very visual film. And when I think about films like some of the other Connery ones, like I see, you know, From Russia with Love being a very dark film. Like it's a almost film noir style color style as I think about it, but I just think it's very nice and enjoyable film to watch. It'd be interesting with Connery. I think it was a struggle because you're trying to work out where to put things because there's loads of good ones. That maybe when we get to Roger, it will be the opposite. Going, well, that one's actually worse than that one, so move that down.
Yeah, it's A Spy Who Loved Me, and then everything else.
yeah.
Spoilers. But yeah, I guess Thunderball also doesn't have that memorable... It does have a memorable theme song, I guess, but it's not one of the greatest, is it?
It's fine.
It's fine.
You know.
Yeah. So then in at number four, it's You Only Live Twice. So Brendan, you ranked this one in fourth.
I did fourth, yeah.
Yeah, same with me. So we basically agree on everyone from here on. It was only Wheatley that sort of disagreed. I guess this one is the most cartoonish of the Sean Connery James Bond films, and I think maybe Roald Dahl has a lot to do with that. But there's just so much that happens in this film. It's just so convoluted.
It's a massive film, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's lots of scenes. There's lots of places. It's really... Yeah, it's even beautiful. Beautifully shot.
Yeah, even just the him dying at the start, it's such a protracted sequence of events that leads him to returning from the dead. But I think the stuff
it's the kids' film, isn't it? It's the kids' favourite.
Yeah.
It's like it's almost like a James Bond Jr. film where there's, like, you know, spy kids where there's just things happening all the time, which I think it benefits from. I think it's nice from that perspective, but obviously... You can't compare it with something like From Russia with Love.
No. It's almost the... Well, I guess it's like the it probably is the most direct inspiration for Austin Powers beyond the 67 Casino Royale, because it's got the volcano lair, it's got the Blofeld with the scar and the accent and all that sort of stuff. It's...
I mean, not just Austin Powers, but almost every... Like, Simpsons have probably done most of that film. Homages to that film, and a lot of other things have as well, because it's It's because it's so big and so cartoony.
Yeah.
It's easy to take from.
But a lot of people who kind of use Bond references later in life, because a lot of people, everyone knows Bond from when you're a kid. But some people haven't watched Bond since they were a kid because they're not really big fans. So they may remember Bond as being, you know, you only live twice. They won't remember all the other ones. So that's why it's probably stuck in everyone's head, because, yeah, it's like some of those scenes are so memorable. Not necessarily good, but memorable.
Yeah, it's definitely a Saturday afternoon bank holiday weekend staple, isn't it?
In fact, it has some of the worst scenes in any Bond films, especially if you're talking about, you know, offensiveness and to women and to ethnic stereotypes and stuff like that. But it's it's definitely one of the nicer looking ones. The budget on that was enormous as well, wasn't it, at the time?
Yeah, I think it was one of the biggest, wasn't it? I think Thunderball maybe just slightly edges it. But yeah, that location stuff, it just looks amazing for Japan. I actually really like that about the early Bond films, is that often they would just stick to one major location and have a little bit in each one. I think sometimes there's a tendency in the later ones to jet set a lot and be all over the place. But when you look at You Only Live Twice, just in Japan, and then on Her Majesty's Secret Service on the mountain, it's like, it's very identifiable in just that one location. I quite like that about
But it's an interesting location as well, especially at that time, because during, you know, the earlier in the last century, things like Japanese culture were really interesting and people didn't know a lot about it. So it was a really interesting place to go to. And then you look at Diamonds Are Forever. Las Vegas wasn't that exciting a place to go to, especially for Americans. It's not like a, you know, beautiful, impressive thing that nobody knows about. So, it's definitely exciting thing to watch for people of that era.
So, in at number three, Dr. No, the very first Sean Connery James Bond film, the very first James Bond film, full stop. Hard to place it higher, I think.
It's still rough around the edges, isn't it, at this point?
Yeah. But it has a purity for me, and obviously clearly for you two, that you don't find with You Only Live Twice or Thunderball, forgetting the other two, right, because they're sort of not contenders. But what sets it apart from You Only Live Twice and Thunderball is just that simplicity. It's a very basic Bond film.
It's almost like they've taken a bit of Thunderball and just done that, because it doesn't have loads of locations. It's fairly, the storyline is quite simple. They're not moving around doing loads of different things, which I think is, obviously they didn't have anywhere near as big a budget to do that film, so they had to pick their battles and choose the best places to go. But I think that's to its credit, and they focused on the story and the character and
and you've got Ken Adam working wonders with the tiny budget that he had as well. It's like an early blueprint for what was to come.
And it's exciting because it's all new. Even when you watch it now, you know that it's the first time you've seen him. You know it's the first time he's done things, which is all pretty cool to see.
First time he delivers that line.
I was literally just about to say that. And that is the one iconic moment from that film. One of the iconic moments. There's that. There's Ursula Andress coming out of the sea. What else? You've had your six. The greatest hits of Bond, and there's three right there for you know, the Hall of Fame instantly. I guess the music, I think, maybe lets the film down just a little bit. You've got the Monty Norman score and the very sort of heavily West Indies inflected style of the soundtrack. I think it kind of dates it a little bit, I feel.
Yes.
Whereas the others have these timeless John Barry scores, this one maybe not so much. And also maybe the finale isn't quite as thrilling or as exciting as what was to come down the line.
I always think with Dr. No that, well, they were originally not going to release that as the first one, were they? That was going to come later on. And if they'd have done Dr. No later on, it would have been like You Only Live Twice. They would have had all of the sets. They would have made the island phenomenal, but they couldn't. So whatever film came first in the Bond series would have suffered from the same thing. And I'm glad it was Dr. No. I think it works well that way.
Yeah, I guess if it had have been Casino Royale, the first book, and they'd been able to do the books sequentially, that this sort of stripped back style would have worked perfectly for that book. But they weren't able to do it. And then I think they looked at Thunderball was going to be the first one, but it was mired in the legal issues.
I think Dr. No gives you a flavour of what's to come. You have a little bit of big budget stuff in there. What Ken Adams does is fantastic with it, and it looks great. So you know what you're in for with Bond, and they get bigger and better as time goes on. I think Casino Royale at that time with no budget would have been a massive risk, because people might have just become a very cheap, you know, spy thing that. And there were a lot of those about at the time.
But the exoticness of the locations for this one really helps. I guess if it was just going to be on the wherever it is, the French coast, then it might not have captured the imaginations, and I guess people weren't able to travel as far then, and it was sort of seeing the world in a different way.
And probably hard to show in Casino Royale, even though it's set in a casino in, is it Montenegro that they film it?
Yeah.
It looks beautiful because it's beautifully shot, and it's the cameras pick it up wonderfully. Back in the olden days, when you're picking up a casino, probably doesn't look as good. It's probably just going to look the same as every other casino in a TV show, so it would be a bit of a waste.
Yeah, so Dr. No, Sean Connery's third best James Bond film, which leaves just two to choose from. And so, in at number two, big drum roll, please. That's it. It's From Russia With Love. And this could easily have been the number one film, I think. I keep coming back to this one. It's just great. I was going to say from start to finish. I do think it tails off a little bit towards the end, but I think it's Bond. Again, it's Bond, at, not back to basics, but starting with the basics, and then building on it from there. It's got a good theme song. It's sort of where Dr. No was like the demo version. This very much feels like a studio version, right?
The first three, even four films are basically putting together the pieces for Connery's Bond. And Dr. No sets up some really nice bits, and it doesn't have even close to all the elements of Bond. And From Russia With Love adds most of the elements, like the bits that the form the basis of Bond are in From Russia With Love. You've got the character down, and when you move over to Goldfinger, which listeners have probably guessed is at number one by now, that's when you've got the whole lot. You've got the whole shebang with Connery's Bond. But I think there's certain elements to From Russia With Love that aren't in Goldfinger. It's definitely. He's got his character's a lot darker, and there's a lot more depth to it than you get in Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's also doing a lot of actual spy work, which is great. I just love the pacing. It just really reins it in, doesn't it? It's like nice, slow, but not too slow. It's still moving along, which is key. I love this. I think my top two could change. You know, they're interchangeable. Depending on how I feel.
Yeah,
for me, like I said, I think it's the finale of From Russia With Love that sort of lets it down. You sort of forget the parts that happen between the stuff that's on the train and then the stuff in the hotel with Rosa Klebb. There's that whole sort of extended chase sequence, which I understand is was in a late edition. They felt they didn't have enough action in it, so they thought we need to add another action scene at the end, and it just detracts from everything that's come before it. And I think that's its only misstep for me. I love all the stuff again, it's a great location, all the stuff in Istanbul. I think it's just a fantastic setting. Yeah. And then on the train, is it the Orient Express? Yes, it is the Orient Express, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is a great spy setting, right? And Hitchcock had done it before, right?
Trains in the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you had a spy film, there was a train, there's a brilliant train sequence, and you've got to do that right. And it just fits in perfectly.
Yeah.
I always think with the From Russia With Love, in that Goldfinger is a great Bond film. It's the perfect Bond film. But From Russia with Love isn't just a great Bond film. It's a great other film as well. There's lots of genres that you could say, well, From Russia with Love, that's in my top three of, you know, spy genres for, you know, 60s spy genres, all these different things. You'd never put Goldfinger in your top spy genre films or anything like that. It's just a great Bond film. So I think, yes, it's From Russia with Love. We're putting this in terms of the best Bond films for Connery, but it would probably top the list for other things for me if it wasn't just a straight Bond film.
And Red Grant is so menacing and unnerving.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
It's excellent.
Well, I always think it's interesting that it's Robert Shaw as well, because I always think of you know, him in Jaws and talking about, you know, looking into the eyes of the shark, and it's the doll's eyes, and it's just like he could be talking about Red Grant. And the way that Red Grant surfaces in this film and just like lays waste to everything in his path, it's so like Jaws, and he's in that film.
I find Red Grant, Robert Shaw, such a weird, like, I seem to remember when I watched From Russia with Love, there was quite a big space between when I'd watched it again, and then I'd probably seen Robert Shaw in a lot of other films since then. Like, it was in The Sting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously Jaws and things. And I never associated him with Red Grant. I never thought that was the same guy as Red Grant. And it took me a while to realise that link, because that role is so different than what he played in all his later roles.
Yeah, I think maybe our next podcast might be a Robert Shaw podcast. That's where I've landed. so I hope you come along for the ride with me, because I just think he's excellent in everything I've seen him in. He's so good.
How many episodes are you doing on that one? Well, I might not be joining that ride.
Yeah. Might be busy. From Russia with Love. What a film. What a film. And that obviously only leaves one more film to mention of Sean Connery's, and that's Goldfinger. And it just almost seems like so obvious to say that it's his best film, but it is his best James Bond.
I don't think we've ever seen anyone who's argued with us. Everyone has gone, yeah, that's it.
Well, I don't know. You do see some rankings online and they don't put it up there. I think I'm trying to think what the other arguments for the number one film. It's normally Casino Royale, right? The one that people...
Oh, for the best Bond film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's an argument for old and new Bond films. I think you can do that. But if you were doing best Connerys,
right,
I don't think there's... The only argument you get is From Russia with Love. And I think that'd be the same argument as what I was giving, where it's a great... It's a brilliant film. But if you just want the complete Bond film, you can't really beat Goldfinger when it comes to, you know, the earlier ones. But yeah, Casino Royale, yeah, you could argue as well.
I'd like to hear reasons why this isn't. If anyone wants to email and let us know what they don't like about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because for me, I can't think of anything.
No. It seems perfect to me. I actually can't think of a reason why... I can't think of any reason why I don't like this film. There's nothing in it I can think of I don't like.
What about Bond trying to seduce a lesbian and making her sleep with him?
But I just think it's ridiculous. And those kind of things are just... I mean, it's barely even... It's just so stupid. It's barely even offensive if you look back at it now. And you don't watch it going, he's so cool for doing that. You just think, well, that's ridiculous. But he's still cool when he's doing it. So you can't dislike him for it.
I think this is it's a fantastic, fantastic film. Like, if you had to name like the three best things about this film, I think you'd struggle. I think, you know, the DB5, the henchman, the villain, the song, the Bond girl. You just keep on going, keep on going. The settings, the scenes, the music. I just think it's all flawless. That I know you've talked about it weekly before, but the score when he goes to the hotel room, and
6 Underground.
Yeah, and that music then, it's just so brilliant.
I think with Goldfinger that you can pick a lot of Bond films and you maybe have, 50 scenes throughout the course of a Bond film, and you look at a lot of them and I'd probably go, that was all right. Yeah, that one's a good one. That one's all right. That one's... Goldfinger, you can pick any scene, literally any scene that's going on in that film, and you go, oh, I love this scene. Like the first bit when he's playing the cards with Goldfinger, it's just a simple scene. It's not a big scene, but every bit of it's so perfectly shot and so it's just it's brilliant. It's not, there's no boring scenes in it.
Yeah, agreed.
Mint julep. So simple.
Yeah.
Brilliant scene.
Great. The fact he's just hanging out as well. He's just hanging out.
Yeah. Golf scene. One of the best golf scenes. The best golf scene in any film.
Yeah.
Without Adam Sandler in it.
Without Adam Sandler in it, yeah.
Obviously, you put Adam Sandler in it, and it doesn't come
and
out.
And the laser scene, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
Just absolutely overplayed, of course, because it's iconic. But for a reason, you know. It's just excellent.
Interesting that often when you read about the later films, how often they talk about bringing Goldfinger back, like his twin brother or whatever. And it is kind of interesting that that's Blofeld, isn't it? I think that was
Blofeld. Who was the Goldfinger one?
Well, they were talking about bringing him back, possibly on Her Majesty's Secret Service as the villain.
Yes, that was right. Yes, yeah.
But yeah, just at that time, you know, he was such an iconic villain for Bond. It's weird, it's unusual that they haven't ever revisited him. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point down the line that they revisit Goldfinger in some way, because that's just where we are at the stage of nostalgia, right?
It'll be a young bloke or woman. It's got to be a big fat man.
It's going to be Michael Fassbender, isn't it? It'll
be a very attractive actor. And you won't realise he's called Goldfinger until the end, when you realise that he's got a Goldfinger and he had it all along.
But I think that's inevitable, surely. Goldfinger to return.
They all will. Every villain will have return at some point, won't they? It's inevitable.
But it's a difficult task to do it well. That's going to be the problem.
Yeah, just got to leave it long enough so we're too old to moan.
Goldfinger Jr.
Yeah, or it'll get to that point where some studio's producing Bond cinematic universe, and there's a young Goldfinger, there's a young Blofeld. Yeah,
Jaws Jr. Well, that concludes, I guess, the ranking of the Sean Connery James Bond films. So just to run that down again, number 7, Diamonds Are Forever. Number 6, Never Say Never Again. Number 5, Thunderball. Number 4, You Only Live Twice. Number 3, Dr. No. Number 2, From Russia With Love. And number 1, Goldfinger. We would obviously love to hear your own personal rankings of the Sean Connery films.
Oh, please do. And if you've got any arguments on why we've got it wrong, I'd love to hear them. We'll read them out. That'd be great.
I think it would be mad for us to say we are empirically correct on this ranking. People are entitled to their opinions.
We have a bit of an echo chamber when it comes to Connery films, because we're obviously saying the same things. But I mean, if somebody's got a reason why the one's better, I'd love to hear it, because we're not right in any by any stretch of the imagination.
So you can email us on podcast@jamesbondaz.co.uk, or you can message us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram on jamesbondaz. But yeah, we'd love to hear from you. So that was our ranking of the Sean Connery films. And just to wrap things up, we just thought we'd have a quick chat about just a few more Connery as Bond discussion points. The worst Connery Bond scene. Where do you start with that?
1971.
Elaborate.
What?
There's a scene that's about 2 hours, 5 minutes long.
Oh, God, go
it's
on.
It's called Diamonds Are Forever.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow.
Wow, that's really good. If you'd like to email in and complain about...
it's Brendan J. Duffy at...
I think worst Bond scenes is a really difficult one, because when you're doing worst Bond scenes for the entire film series, it's quite easy because... Like, some of them have awful Bond scenes. Like, if you were to pick the Bond that's got the worst scenes, it's more, isn't it? Because there's so many stupid scenes. Connery doesn't really have many stupid scenes. Like, it's quite hard to find something where you go, that's ridiculous. He just looks stupid in that. So it's quite difficult from that perspective. But I think most of Connery's bad scenes largely come from the time he was in.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're either offensive to some ethnicity or to women. Mm. It's not him being bad in a scene. I think it's just the time it was in, and it just doesn't sit right. He's not dressed as a clown or something like Roger Moore. But I think there's a lot of those scenes.
Or a gorilla.
So essentially, it's not so much choosing the worst scene, it's choosing the most offensive scene.
I mean, yeah. I mean the one that always tops the list is the yellow face in You Only Live Twice. Being disguised
The Romulan.
Yeah, as a Japanese person. It's just awful. It's offensive on every level. But I guess it's kind of lifted to a certain extent from Fleming, is it? I don't even remember.
I don't know. I just think that is... I think that's the one time where Connery looks stupid. He just looks ridiculous. He doesn't look cool.
No, he doesn't look Japanese.
He doesn't look Japanese. He doesn't look cool. He just looks weird. And it's a very odd thing for him to do. Like, they should have taken that out. Even if it wasn't for the racism, take it out because it looks stupid.
Yeah, yeah, racism's enough though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and there's the other, there's like the man talk scene.
Yes.
The beginning of Goldfinger.
Yep.
Problematic. You Only Live Twice at the beginning. The conversation about duck.
The Peking duck, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Diamonds Are Forever, the opening scene as well, where he strangles the woman with the bikini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's always the same though, with like every scene that you put down as the worst Connery scenes, it's always just because it's offensive in some way. It's just unnecessarily offensive. I just wish he'd done something really stupid, so at least you could have that at the bottom of the list.
What about ballroom dancing in Never Say Never Again?
Oh, that, yes. Yeah,
and then he drops her down and says, your brother's dead. Whispers in her, your brother's dead.
Yeah, Never Say Never Again is probably got a few of his most ridiculous scenes, because he does play up to the fact he's a bit older and he's not as cool, doesn't he?
And he does that rapey massage thing as well.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So he had,
it's kind of forgiven, though, because the film is a bit slapstick anyway. You've got characters in it that are designed just to be stupid. So it's almost like it's not as bad when he does something stupid in that film.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's just a silly film, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what about, let's move on from the negative. What about his best scenes? What are, you know, the ones that show Connery at his best? Straight in there, his introduction in Dr. No, just with the simple line, just the smouldering look from the table.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Perfect, and he's Bond, James Bond. It's just,
Actually, I was when I was coming up with questions that we could discuss, one of them was, a bit of a strange morbid one, really, but if you had like an obituary for Sean Connery and you could have a 5-second looping gif as part of his obituary on his website, from any film, from any scene of anything, what would it be? That was what I was thinking. You just have that looping scene of him when he first became Bond as like the thing you remember him for.
Mm. I mean, that's pretty much what BBC News did when he died. They just had that scene.
I would also have gone for the umbrella in Last Crusade, but it's not as big, is it?
No.
Sorry, I've moved on to another question. Go back. Where were we?
I started talking about Dr. No, and again from that film, and I always say this, you know, the bit where he kills I always forget what his name is, but with the assassin Dent. Who's waiting for him, Dent, yeah, Professor Dent in the hotel room. It's just
six shots, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's that moment you realise that Bond is not here to make friends. He's here. He is an assassin. He's a killer.
He's not a hero, is he? He's not your normal hero straight away.
No.
Yeah, that's good.
Then, of course, the train scene from Russia with Love.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got... You could probably... It'd be quite nice to choose scenes from Connery's Bond as to, like, show how he's well-rounded, like his humorous scenes, his hard man scenes, because he's got a bit of everything, I think, in across them that that some of the Bonds don't have. I still always go for that scene. I'll very quick with this because I've already talked about it before, but the one where he walks in and sees the reflection in the woman's eyes in the bath, and shocking, positively shocking. That's for me, that's just everything.
Nice impression.
I didn't put the effort in with that one. I should have.
You had all that. You had the sh as well. You know, would have been the perfect one. Perfect one to attack to try.
we didn't have a lot of positive to say about You Only Live Twice. We said a bit positive about You Only Live Twice, but there are really good action sequences in there for me. The one, first of all, where he fights the guy who is The Rock's real life grandfather. That's a good bruising fight scene where they're throwing sofas at each other. That's really good, and he's got those really cool shoes on.
Yeah.
And then also in You Only Live Twice, where he escapes across the rooftop and the camera tracks him. Really cool panning shot across the roof, and he's sort of fighting loads of different people at the dockside, and it's just fantastic.
I can't think of, you know, when you look at cinema and you see people doing this, some things in films, and you think that's an amazing bit of cinematography, like The Matrix and things. There's not many examples of people doing that scene that well as happens in that film, where you've got that kind of tracking shot across the top and there's loads of people fighting, he's just running along. It's a really standout shot. I do love that scene.
Yeah, very Nolan-esque, if you ask me, I think. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to choose from, really.
And all of Goldfinger, you know, you just go, all of it. Pick a scene, like you said earlier.
Mint julep.
Yeah. Mint julep. Obsessed with a mint julep, aren't you?
I quite like a mint julep, actually.
Is it alcoholic, a mint julep?
I'm sure we can find one.
Let's make them. Yeah, is there any other things you wanted to chat about with Connery?
Well, I suppose let's do the question that I came up with that I confused quite a lot when I was explaining to you. But if you were going to cast a young Connery nowadays, so you're talking like he's start of his Bond career, he's 30 something, you're gonna cast him in a movie that's come out in the past 10 years. Who would that character be in a film?
Right. Okay. Give us an example.
So I spent ages thinking about this, and it's really difficult, I think, because you're doing it as him as like a 30-year-old. You're not doing it as him, you know, when he's in The Rock and stuff, when he was older, which would have been easier to cast him, and because he did so many things. And I was thinking that he's always been quite serious as an actor. He wanted the serious roles, didn't he? But he was always after the big roles. So the people I kind of hit on were, and I'll tell you the one first, because the other one you're going to laugh at when I say it. So my first one is Christian Bale. I think he'd pick up quite similar roles to Christian Bale in that he wants the really good roles, but he's quite diverse in what he'll do. So
so is he playing Batman?
I tried to get away with the Batman one, but I think if there was a superhero role that Connery would play at that age, it's got to be that age, it would be Batman. I think he would have been all right at it, but I don't think he would have. I think he'd have been more art house. I think he'd be more doing more interesting kind of Oscar winning roles and stuff like that, that hard men would play. But the other role I've got down for him is, it's not because of the actor, it's because of the role, but Tom Hardy in Warrior.
Yeah.
I can see Connery doing that. It's a cool role. It's a hard man role, but it's interesting that, in fact, a lot of like when I was looking through this, I generally came back to roles that other Bond actors had played as well. like Knives Out. He'd probably be quite good at Knives Out, but you'd expect that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I
understand the question now.
I really struggled with, I don't think he'd be in Marvel films at that age. I just don't think he'd. I just can't see him doing any character in that. I can see him as an older man doing it. Like, he did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, didn't he? But as a young man, I just can't work. It's quite hard to choose roles for him.
All right. Well, thinking about Connery back then and then transposing him to now, he really wanted to work with the best directors. He worked with Hitchcock. He worked with Sidney Lumet. So then, you know, who would the equivalents be? You got to look at Martin Scorsese. You got to look at the roles that Leonardo DiCaprio plays. You know, The Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah. He would be, you know, the perfect guy for something like that. Or,
well, I looked at Nolan. There might be some Nolan films that you pick up.
Yeah, another DiCaprio role in the Dom Cobb in Inception would have been interesting. Yeah.
What about Tarantino? Do you think he'd work with Tarantino?
Whoa, tantalising. Tantalising.
You do a period piece with, you know, Tarantino period piece with Connery in.
I was thinking another actor, and this is, again, obviously Bond related, Fassbender, but in something like 12 Years a Slave, I can definitely see Connery playing villain roles in things like that.
Or maybe like a science fiction-y type thing, like a Prometheus or something.
Yeah. Something with depth, where he's a bit of, I think he's always got to play somebody who's a bit tough, because he's never going to get away from being tough, is he? He's got to be, you're not going to believe him as like a non-tough actor.
No, he's not going to be playing Tom Hanks roles, is he?
No, no, definitely not. So what about Magneto, if you're going Fassbender?
Oh, yes.
I just don't think he'd go, under the age of 45, I don't think he'd go superhero.
No.
There's more depth to Magneto, though, isn't there?
There's not a lot of depth in Magneto.
I guess if he's following the Christian Bale trajectory, it was Batman was his Bond, right? It put him on the path to doing the Oscar-winning stuff, and now he's coming back to superhero films with Thor 4.
I forgot about that, and that messed up my thought process.
No, but I think you're on the right track. I think Christian Bale's probably a good. He wants someone that wants to be taken seriously, that wants to work with the best. Has worked with the best.
I think you could just take Bale out and put Connery in, because even in Ford versus Ferrari, I could see that as well.
Oh, very good. I guess it's the actor who he is most like now. Good question. All right, so let's finish off with have you got an example, Brendan? Did you have someone you wanted to a film you wanted to say?
No.
All right, so this is the last question then. You can take any Sean Connery film with you on a desert island, but it can't be one of his Bond films. Which one do you take?
I'm guessing BJ's going to be Sir Billy. You already got it on him now.
Got it packed just in case.
Oh, that is tricky.
I'm taking The Last Crusade.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Morning, day and night.
The Last Crusade on my list.
I'm taking Untouchables, you know.
Which I thought, brilliant, great film. I'd love to watch that, but I don't want to watch it. Like, you're on a desert island. You're probably going to watch it at least once a week. You've got nothing else to do. I don't want to watch Kevin Costner once a week. It's a balance, which I don't want to. I thought about this. I've been through this whole process, and the one I went for, because I'm not going for. It's not like what's his best film, because it's easy to choose that. You're choosing a film that you could watch over and over again, and it's got a bit of depth to it. You can enjoy it multiple times. You don't want to choose like I thought of like Finding Forrester. I thought, well, I'm not going to watch that more than one summer. So Time Bandits, I thought, because there's so much going on in that film. You could watch it in bits if you wanted to.
Yeah. All right. Well, if I'm not taking Last Crusade or Time Bandits, then it would be The Man Who Would Be King. Because then you got
I looked at that as well.
Two heavyweight film, for the price of one.
So you got to have something uplifting, haven't you? You got to have something a bit of fun on the desert island.
Yeah. My concern is on this desert island, if there's electricity and a screen, you should not just be sitting watching one Sean Connery film. You could probably try and escape off of that island.
It's just a battery. It's just like a solar battery.
Right, fair enough. Okay. Yeah. You've thought about
you
this.
You haven't got anything else you can use it with.
Right. Fair.
You've got your Sir Billy, and that's it.
me and Sir Billy, stuck on an island.
Dream island.
If we were selling T-shirts, then that would be on it. Me and Sir Billy. And then you can't watch Kevin Costner every day.
I think a lot of people would have that on T-shirts.
Definitely. I'm not watching Kevin Costner every day. That's great. I think, if listeners want to get in touch with us with their Connery rankings, also their best and worst Connery scenes, and their Connery Desert Island disc, then absolutely.
And any arguments against what Brendan has said as well can come in.
Could I just say an honourable mention for his rendition of In My Life?
Go on.
Have you heard this?
No.
Right.
The Beatles song.
Yeah. He speaks it. He doesn't sing it.
What?
But well, like William Shatner does.
Yeah. Look out for it. Go and dig it up, because I would probably take that. I'd rather than any of the films, I'd just take that song. His rendition.
You can't take
what
that.
What did he do it for?
It was on one of the albums where George Martin got actors to do covers.
Oh, interesting.
Wow.
I'll have to dig that up.
Mm. Amazing.
Right, well, that's been another episode of the James Bond A to Z, slightly different to what we usually do. We will be back next time, and our next episode will be just a regular episode, I guess. We'll be talking about Bill Conti, Chris Corbould, John Cork, Caroline Cossey, Derek Cracknell and Tom Cross, all six very different filmmakers who had different levels of impact on the James Bond films. And then following that, we'll have the Daniel Craig specials, which we are very much looking forward to. We hope you can join us. If you want to email us, just remind us what the email address is, please.
podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
And follow us on social media at...
JamesBond A to Z.
A to Z, no, yeah. I guess our Instagram is our most exciting place. There's lots of great pictures on there that we share, but the Twitter's growing as well now. So, come and join us and tell us what we've got wrong, because we always like to be kept on our toes. And thanks for all the emails we've been getting as well. This has been the James Bond A to Z podcast. The James Bond A to Z podcast will return.
Thanks a lot.
Ciao.
The James Bond A to Z podcast features Tom Butler, Brendan Duffy and Tom Wheatley. The podcast was produced by Tom Wheatley, with music by Tom Ingermels, and artwork supplied by Helen Dolly.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.